Welcome, dear listeners, to another episode of Acadia's Ahead of the Curve. I am your host, John Pucciarelli. Here with me today is a very, very special guest, CEO of ISDA, Scott O'Malley. Scott, well, welcome.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, this is a three-peat for you.
It's fantastic.
It's unprecedented.
It's great to be back. Happy to talk about all the big issues facing the derivatives industry.
We've got a lot to unpack. We call this Unpacking the Agenda. We've done it the first time you did it, the second time we did it. We're going to continue on with it. We do have a lot to talk about. But yeah, it's great. It's great to have you. This is the first time I'm actually in this studio. It's the first time we've done this podcast together in a room together. So it's quite nice. I like it.
Yeah. First class.
It is. So how's things? Before we get into the agenda, how's things? I know there's a lot going on in the UK. You got the Euro Cup. You got an election coming. I know there's a ton of things that ISDA has been doing. The last time I saw you, we were at the ISDA AGM in Tokyo. First of all, the AGM, I loved it, by the way, always. A lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. What are some of the things that stood out for you at the AGM this year?
Well, it was a well-attended AGM. We were in Tokyo this year. Yep. Cherry blossoms waited till we got there, so that was it was beautiful weather to be in Tokyo at that time, and great topics and issues on the agenda. So we were talking about a lot of the things we'll cover today. We were talking about implementation of the margin rules, making sure we get the capital rules dialed in a risk-appropriate way. We're thinking about technology and innovation, how we can solve the problems that the industry faces in terms of operational challenges at all levels and supporting compliance and doing so in the most cost-effective way. And ISDA can play a serious role there. We're also talked about some of our new initiatives around the notices hub that we're going to be rolling out, as well as other technology solutions as well. So when we unpack the agenda, I'm sure we'll get into it today and look forward to the conversation.
We absolutely will. We are going to touch on some of those things. So the first thing that I wanted to talk to you about was the Common Domain Model, or CDM. It is near to my heart as well, because when I was most, I don't know if everyone listening knows, we were former colleagues. I worked at ISDA for 5 years. CDM was just kind of beginning when I was there. I don't know if it was 2015 or something like that, right? And there's been some recent wins for CDM. I know the work is never done. And there's a lot of things that we're working on at Acadia with you guys on in CDM and some use cases. I don't know if you want to, like, not everyone knows what CDM is. Can you just give us a brief, like, what is CDM? Why is it important? And then you could talk about some of the recent, wins that ISDA has had in this space.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it starts with the regulatory agenda. Mm-hmm. And once the regulations were implemented, we had trading requirements, clearing requirements, data reporting, non-clear margin requirements. And all of these new requirements for the swaps and derivatives industry required a common infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And building that common infrastructure that all participants were going to have to hook into and align with to make sure that their compliance was done made a lot of sense. So making sure that we were connected to clearinghouses like LCH, mm-hmm. Trade repositories, and trade execution facilities. And what had been done before was a bilateral relationship. So you did not have all of this standardization that was required. So people hold data in different formats, mm-hmm. and then they were required to report it in a common format. So when we kind of went back and asked the membership, what would be the most helpful solution for you? They said, well, let's agree on common data formats, common taxonomy, mm-hmm. so we can start to map to these common infrastructures in a structured, consistent way. And so if you can do all of the post-trade infrastructure along those lines, it'll be much easier to scale and to automate. Yeah. So we said, all right, fantastic. Where do we start? And it actually started with, how do you describe life cycle events from the initiation of the trade all the way through data reporting and all the bits in between? Yeah. So what it came down to is you needed that foundation. It's not unlike what we do with legal, mm-hmm. right? Get those legal terms right, get the documentation squared away so everybody's working off the same set of documentation to facilitate negotiation and trading. So that's where we started. And the common domain model is that common taxonomy that you describe life cycle events mm-hmm. across all products in a very consistent way. And then you can use that to scale. So we have an architecture for, essentially a software, and then we license that, and it's actually not even licensed, it's open source.
Yeah.
So we give it to all of our members that they can help iterate and develop it, and we build that out across all products. We've now working with other trade associations, including ISLA, the securities lending, ICMA, the capital markets, which have the repo markets.
Yep.
So they are also building the common domain model to standardize their lifecycle events. Working together, we can bring scale and automation across the globe and to help bring costs down. That's the goal. Make sure you comply exactly as the regs require and do so in the most efficient way. And that's what our objective is, and that's how the common domain.
Yeah. I mean, it's a natural transition, right, from where we were when the regs were coming out, whether it was trade reporting, UMR. And now as we settle into it and we see what the cost structures are, you know, that's everyone's theme, right?
Yeah.
Now we're in an environment of how do we save money? How do we reduce costs?
Yeah.
We do the same thing. I think building adapters on the software side is costly. It's costly for everyone. If we can reduce that by using a common domain model, it's a win-win for everybody. So yeah, there is, you know, without, letting things go publicly, there are quite a few things, use cases that Acadia is working on directly with ISDA on. So I'm excited about it. And we'll probably, between the end of this year, beginning of next year, we'll see how that all rolls out. But, between collateral, between trade reporting, I think the trade reporting piece was always it made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's still, from a legal agreement perspective, makes a ton of sense. Yeah. So,
I touched on the trade reporting, which is probably our number one use case and where we're helping members comply today. So we began with the CFTC. Mm-hmm. We've done Europe and EMIR rules, JFSA, the Japanese rules. We have about another six rules that are left to be implemented in terms of data reporting. The regulators around the world have agreed to update their rules to get better alignment, but they're not perfect. So making sure that we have a best practice for each jurisdiction, and then we code that to using the common domain model. So that becomes your compliance tool. We're going to have, at the end of this, probably by the end of 25 or early 26, we're going to have nearly a dozen jurisdictions we have the best practice and the common domain model. And what the industry can count on from ISDA is our commitment that we will continue to update those core jurisdictions. So the compliance tools will be pushed out using the common domain model. So if you're using the common domain model, you will get compliance every time there's an update.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scale play that we support as an industry trade association, and we push that down to our membership. So your compliance becomes much more cost efficient. You don't have to do it all by yourself. You can rely on a consistent outcome that is regulatory compliant, and we're paying for it.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it makes everybody's life a lot easier.
Yeah.
And, we like the opportunity around collateral. Everybody's exchanging collateral today, cleared and non-cleared. How do we standardize and automate that process so it is super efficient, cost-effective, and you get it done appropriately? Because, it embedded in that is also a risk issue. And you, LCH, Acadia, you guys deal with that on a regular basis. So
all the time.
The collateral reform is an exciting new opportunity that we all have to get better at.
Yeah, I agree. Look, it's the right thing to do. It's great that it's been, gaining momentum. It's great that other trade associations have been getting on board. I know Finos is involved. I think they had an event yesterday here in London. But yeah, I think for all of us, getting behind something like this has always been a great idea. It's great that it's coming to fruition, and there's a lot more to come, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about it. Great. Thanks, Scott. Switching gears, talking about the AGM, capital reforms are always on the agenda in America, what's going on with the end game and the advocacy and the impact. I think it wasn't there, the Basel III Endgame, there was maybe 500 responses. I would think 1% of it was positive, right? So it's an interesting space for us as well in Acadia, as we look at optimization and SACR and FRTB and all these other things that we offer the, our clients in terms of optimization for capital. But I did want to talk about this because I know ISDA has done quite a bit, right, in this space. working with, you know, other trade associations doing quantitative impact studies. Can you just touch on like what's going on recently from an ISA perspective on Basel III? I'm not going to ask you like where do you think it's going, although, you know, we heard public comments from Governor Bowman yesterday on the Federal Register. Looks like it's going to go in a positive direction, however you look at that. But, you know, talk to me about, you know, your perspectives on this and, you know, maybe what's next for ISDA, if anything.
Well, the Basel rules are very, very important. All the capital rules,
yes.
Right? And ISDA has contributed through the entire Basel III process to the QIS consultations run by Basel and now run by in the individual jurisdictions. And throughout the process, it has, you know, we've helped refine and pushed for risk-appropriate capital rules. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Basel endgame is we're waiting for a final rule, but there we've commented on the interim rule or the draft mm-hmm. rule, and it has mm-hmm. some serious problems. And we commented focusing specifically on the trading book. Mm-hmm. There's a banking book, the ops book, and we're focused on the trading book. And you mentioned the QIS, which we were able to respond to using the data provided by the G-SIB banks.
Yeah.
And that was useful, and we were able to really look at it in a granular level. Our comment file was 163 pages, right? Data-driven, mm-hmm. fact-based, mm-hmm. Really got into the details and suggested very specific reforms. Let me just give you an example of three areas where, you know, high level, yep. where we think there are some real problems in the trading book.
Sure.
FRTB, you mentioned, you know, we're looking, we think that there's about 100% increase in RWA as a result of the proposal. And a lot of that is driven by the move to standardized approach. You know, really, if internal models are not going to be used anymore, that's going to give you a more conservative implementation. But 100% increase in RWA is a huge lift.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to be a revenue neutral approach. So you kind of wonder how that's coming, where that's coming from. Another area where we think they've overshot the mark is on securities financing transactions. It is a Basel reform. There's an 18% increase in RWA, mm-hmm. and that is due to put a minimum floor. These are relatively low-risk assets, these mm-hmm. security financing, and it's critical to the financing of the derivatives, including supporting the collateral exchange. So that's kind of important. It's got an 18% tax on it now. The Europeans ignored this proposal. It is not in the European approach. We think, you know, aligning those approaches is probably the better way to go, particularly for a low-risk trade. Mm-hmm. And then the final one, which I just find kind of unbelievable, is the 80% increase in clearing. Mm-hmm. Clearing has performed remarkably well post-crisis. It is most of derivatives today are in a clearinghouse. It has been cost-effective. It has been capital-efficient. But they're now proposing an increase on the client leg of increasing by 80% through both the CVA proposal and the G-SIB surcharge. You know, with more things going into clearing, which is safer, I struggle to see why, yeah. you know, more capital is going to make this process better. It is going to make it significantly more expensive, which I think is the wrong way to do it here. Capital is super efficient today. We want to keep it that way so people can continue to clear their trades. So we really hope that they look more holistically at where we are in the clearing space and how the capital rules are going to impact that, because it's a massive tax on clearing, yeah. and that's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've laid it out, and like you said, it's fact-based, it's data-driven. We're not making these things up. And it sounds like people are listening. And it might be going in a direction that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. I guess more to come here. I was, you know, as of the taping of this, you know, it's the end of June. I was worried that something was going to come out this morning and then we would have to shift and talk about it, but we're good. Maybe it'll come out next week. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's the amount of work that ISDA has done, that the industry has done, really, I mean, and this is, these are big things. These are important things. You know, it's great that, you know, that this data is here and that you were able to articulate it and show it to everyone who needs to see it. And really, I mean, these have, it's not just our industry, it's everywhere, right? I mean, those comments came from all sectors of the economy. So this is an interesting space for me. We've been talking about this on our podcast as well. So, but thank you for sharing that with us, Scott. And yeah, more to come, I guess. Shifting gears a little bit away from capital and looking really at some jurisdictions that ISDA has been focused on, Acadia has been focused on as well, is China, India, and Mexico. For several different reasons. I know from an ISDA perspective, you've been pouring a lot of resources and effort into closeout netting and getting that done in those in some of those jurisdictions in China and India specifically. But there's also UMR coming for India and Mexico. And I'll talk a little bit about what Acadia is doing. Mexico is, UMR is the end of this year, December 31st. I think India is November 8th or something. I forgot the exact date. But they're, you know, UMR just never ends. There's always something coming. And I know ISDA has done quite a bit of work on all of those fronts, right? And we continue to do that. What are some of the focus on these markets for ISDA and really for the OTC derivatives market? I mean, India and China specifically, I mean, there's, you know, we look at India's GDP outpacing the world. They surpassed China in terms of population recently. There is, you know, by all stretches of the imagination, there's tons of potential there. Yeah. Again, I'm looking at it from a very, you know, broad perspective, but specifically at ISDA, I know there's been a lot of papers that you've published. Can you talk about like what has been done at ISDA? What are we looking at going forward?
Yeah, let me, on India and China specifically, the growth potential is massive. They have early stage derivative markets, mm-hmm. and you can see where they've certain products or certain participants involved, but it's not really the complete package of good risk management, building out the curve around interest rates, mm-hmm. you know, developing a deeper FX market. There's a lot, you know, these, both of these countries have strong equity positions, but mm-hmm. you know, how international participants can engage in that or having hedging tools around credit markets and securities markets. So we see a lot of potential around really building out those markets. And we have wind at our back on that one, right? Yeah. These are regulators and market participants that are interested in developing their markets further. So, you know, we're kind of there to help. And we've published two papers, one in China, I think, end of 2021, and then India more recently in the end of 2023, mm-hmm. recommending areas where development of new products, particularly on interest rate curves, longer out the curve development, increasing the number of participants, for example, pension funds, insurance companies, being allowed to use hedging and derivative products mm-hmm. To support and manage their risk long-term is critically important. And you can see why a long-term curve would be helpful there, making sure that they have a full complement of risk management tools. So, you know, again, we were there in India earlier this year, and I, you know, just recently returned from a trip to China. And there's a lot of interest there. We are also responding to the regulatory requirements. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, the non-cleared margin rules are coming in. India's got its rules underway, and so we're supporting the VM and yeah. specifically the documentation there. We want to make sure that people understand and know how to use the ISDA SIM. As a margin model that's been used in over a dozen jurisdictions worldwide already to align that in consistent throughout China and India. So we've conducted trainings. We just had the training in China, but for both market participants and the regulatory bodies. China is coming along. I expect we will see VM rules at the end of this year, 2024. IM rules after that, mm-hmm. But they're really interested in understanding more about the SIM, more about documentation to make sure that they align globally with the current best practices. Yeah. So again, it's a bit wind at our back, but there's a lot of work to be done. Sure. Mexico, there's some more work to be done there as well for the non-cleared margin rules. It's always a challenge. You know, we're really focused on international alignment, and you know, many times you go into a new economy or a new jurisdiction, they want to do their rules their own way. And then we kind of like to highlight what's already been done and what's already succeeded
works.
And how we align that and why why there's a benefit for their economy to align right. internationally and to avail themselves to substitute compliance for other jurisdictions. So, again, it's driving best practices, again, driving efficiency mm-hmm. to make sure that everybody can do so in a cost-effective way. That brings market development. It also brings liquidity to their market, which yeah. they're also keen to see.
Yeah, it can't be underestimated, and you talk about education and aligning global rules. And I'm not assuming that most people in our industry just assume that that happens. There's a lot of work that the industry that ISDA puts together, specifically on Mexico. I remember, you know, your colleagues putting out a list of 20 some odd pieces of advocacy with Mexico, especially to align to the global yeah. standards, which they weren't. And now they're getting closer to doing that.
Yeah.
Even the use of SIM
yeah.
and the approval process for SIM. So it is still a lot of work. It really is. And it's amazing what you guys accomplish sometimes. And I, you know, sometimes I sit back because I was in that chair and say, you know, we're still doing it.
Yeah.
And we have to do it. There's, you know, otherwise the outcome would not be great. So, you know, I just want to thank you. I'm kind of, this is a little bit of a love fest right now, but thank you so much.
You've got skin in the game and we appreciate
it. We do. And it makes it, our lives a lot easier, yeah. right? Then we can tell the story when we go down because where we are, we're the solution provider, right? We're yep. the software solution provider. We're, you know, the standard for IM reconciliation. So, but, you know, we have to get the regulators there first to say, okay, well, at least, yeah, you can use SIM. By the way, it's been used since 2015,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. So yeah. I just want to acknowledge that. I think it's...
Well, there's a lot of success around the table, whether it's yeah. reg reporting, non-cleared margin, and non-cleared margin has opened us up to so many either technology, mm-hmm. but it's a complete package with risk management, technology and operational efficiency, as well as legal reform and documentation. I mean, we've digitized all these documents so they can be signed and negotiated mm-hmm. On platforms using ISDA Create and other means to really scale this implementation. Yeah. Everything is about scale and efficiency for us to make our members' lives easier, right? Support compliance, make it as cost-effective as possible.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we do too. Yeah, so Acadia is super focused on these three jurisdictions as well. We've just put out a fact sheet for our clients in Mexico, but you know, it is a partnership between us and the industry always to ensure that you know we can deliver these solutions. Great. Thanks for that, Scott. Okay, just wrapping up the agenda. And you know, you're a former CFTC commissioner, so you were in politics. I can't not have a podcast with you without talking a little bit of politics, because there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the UK, right? We have an election next week. There was an election in Parliament in the US, where I'm from, where you're from. You live here. I don't. We have an election coming up. There's some shifts going on. I'm always curious, and I'm not going to hold you to anything. And, you know, I know you had a derivative views that came out a couple of days ago, kind of touching on some of this. I always wonder, well, what does this mean for my business? What does it mean for us as an industry? Maybe it means nothing. Maybe it's business as usual. I'm always curious to hear from someone in a position like yours. You know, maybe you've heard things, maybe, you know, conversations, things you can share. What does any of this mean to ISDA or to the industry, if anything? And, you know, I'm pretty sure it's business as usual, but, you know, what's your viewpoint on the changing, I'll call it, I don't want to be too dramatic, because changing political wind sounds a little bit over the top, but it seems like there's a shift going on.
Yeah. Well, geopolitical risk is always top five issues for people. Mm-hmm. And even after implementing the regs, we had COVID. Yep. We had the Russian invasion of Ukraine, right? These are not election-driven events necessarily. So I kind of, the more things change, the more they stay the same. So that's the kind of the way I view, you know, the elections, yeah. right? We've had a number of elections since the great financial crisis, and the regulatory agenda has been consistent. It hasn't changed a lot. There hasn't been significant reforms. There are incremental reforms, mm-hmm. and we adjust to that, as you point out, right? UK election, you know, we'll know July 4th. Mm-hmm. They're having their elections. The European Parliament just had their elections. France is going to be voting. The U.S. is going to vote in November. There are elections all around the world that will have impacts for sure. We'll respond to that. But I think the elections are the kind of the least of our problems right now.
Right.
It's still some of these other events. When you think about when Russia invaded Ukraine, it was the energy infrastructure that was so impacted, and the energy prices went went through the roof. And that, of course, meant margin went through the roof because it's tied to volatility.
Yep.
And so we were trying to respond to that. And how do you deal with the higher price of clearing? What does that mean for the non-cleared market? And trying to find that balance and sourcing collateral. Yep. These are the huge impacts to the market that are, you know, you don't anticipate. Yeah. COVID, of course, with the dash for cash.
Yeah.
The LDI market here, leveraging the pension funds. Our CAGOs are always raised as issues. And these are beginning to come in. This is a new regulatory theme about this, you know, what they call it, NBFI, non-bank financial intermediation. Is there a move from, you know, bank-driven counterparty risk to more liquidity risk, which I agree there is. I mean, we've changed the market structure significantly with the regulation. We have to keep an eye on that as to how it is impacting liquidity. Liquidity is the best barometer for healthy market. Good, deep, liquid markets, great you know, that's great. When they get fragile, that's when you start to have the problems. That's when you have these, you know, sell-offs, you have devaluation of certain assets, and you kind of think about what's next. Well, people are talking about the U.S. Treasury market, right? You're making that more robust. We are going to be dealing with clearing of Treasury markets. That's a big deal, right? A 30-plus trillion market and potentially going to 40 trillion, you know, with the debt. You know, A, who's going to buy all that, right? And then is clearing going to be cost-effective? Where we have the where do we source the collateral for the, all of that? I'm not... It's not the sky is falling kind of episode here,
but it's something
we have to address.
Right.
And these are the kind of things that are on our radar screen. We're thinking about, we're really thinking about market liquidity quite a bit. And whether you're a bank providing liquidity or you're the buy side providing liquidity, these are valuable. We want to keep them doing what they're doing, right? We need deep liquid markets. And we want to make sure that the regulatory structure does not make markets more fragile and subject to gapping and price runs.
Yeah. I'll tease this one. We're not going to talk about it, but there was a BCBS paper that was written on counterparty credit risk, which touches on a lot of these things. Maybe when you come back for the fourth time, we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're focusing in on it here at Acadia as well, and we'll be talking about that. But it all makes sense. Like you said, we've had tons of elections, and you know, all these other things, these geopolitical events that happen that you can't predict, are what we have to make sure that we're focusing on. Like you said, liquidity is top of mind always. So,
I think that's going to be an issue for us going forward. We have deep, robust markets?
Yep.
You know, have we set the rules appropriately, and can we source you know, the collateral and the risk management? I think, you know, it brings us back. There's some operational things. We've all got to commit to making the collateral system more robust, more automated. You know, is that tokenization? Maybe. But, you know, the big thing is making sure that we have sufficient, adequate, deep collateral available to do that risk transfer.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree. All right. Well, Scott, this is great. Thank you for coming here today in person. Will you come back for a fourth?
Oh, I'm in.
All right.
I'm in.
We're gonna come back here. I love the studio. This is really nice. Anything you want to close with before we end? Anything you want to plug for ISDA? I know the AGM is in Amsterdam, right?
Yep.
Next year?
Yeah, in May of 2025. Yeah,
it's in May. Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, our superpower at ISDA is bringing the industry together, right? Solving problems when all the right participants, buy side, sell side, key infrastructure providers like yours, come together, come up with solutions, then we can implement them because everybody's had a go at them, everybody's discussed them, they're fully aware, and then the implementation becomes that much easier. Whether it's standardized legal agreements, standardized operational processes, standardized risk management tools, and supporting the efficient implementation of the regulations, it's all in our best interest to kind of make sure we solve these problems as they're coming up and then turn around and get a cost-effective implementation. So, you know, make sure you come to the ISDA working groups and get involved and pay attention to the issues. Obviously, all of our website is full of information. And useful solutions
and free
policy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's right available to everybody. Yeah.
Well, Scott, thanks again. Appreciate your time. And we'll be back again.
Well, thanks, John. And thanks to Acadia for supporting our efforts.
Thank you all for joining in this episode of Ahead of the Curve. I hope you found it interesting. I know I did. If you want to find out more about this podcast and other podcasts, you can find us on acadia.inc or any of your other streaming services. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you.